This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the July 20th edition of Invest Talk, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. We try to answer your questions live during this hour, 4 to 5 Pacific time. Or you can leave your questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART, the same number that's live. And we will be going to calls in just a minute. Gold has its own DNA of volatility. It's a non-event for gold to go up or down 20% in a rolling 12-month period. So what's the smart gold strategy right now? That's going to be one of our talking points today. A question came into up the other day from a caller that brought up junk bonds. And one of the most popular assets today is junk bonds. Now, we are in a very low interest rate environment, and many investors naturally are looking for assets that will pay them good yields, and they're reaching for junk bonds. There's an issue here. There's a risk here that I don't think people are paying attention to. These junk bonds are companies that are rated triple B by Standard & Poor's, or worse, triple B or worse, double B, single B, triple C, double on down, down, down. These are what are called junk bonds. Investment grade or triple B or above. And historically, 42% of all corporate junk bonds ever issued have defaulted. 42% over time. But investors today are clearly overlooking that fact, accepting yields that are historically so low in relationship to U.S. Treasuries. Many junk bond issues are going to market with very weak, non-existent covenants. You don't even know what a covenant is? If you don't, you shouldn't be buying a junk bond. Usually, covenants protect bondholders from companies issuing further bonds are leveraging themselves to unsustainable levels, and they're not even including that anymore because no one's demanding them. Recent returns on debt in current cycle look great, but risk levels are rising. During bear markets, junk debt acts more like stocks. They crash. During 2008, for instance, the ETF HYG, that tracks high-yield corporate bonds, high-yield meaning junk, corporate bonds, was down 29%. When the ETF TLT, that tracks the 30-year treasury, was up 29%. The junk bonds were down 29%, the treasuries were up 29%. So don't think that the next time the market crashes, whenever that happens, and I'm not saying it's going to happen soon, I don't think it will. But, you know, many people don't recognize the risk of the junk bonds that they are investing in. All they see is the yield that they're getting, the yield. And the yield is not very good compared to traditional spreads between high-quality treasuries and junk. It kind of stinks. And it might be hard to handle low CD yields, maybe. I understand that because it's not giving you much. But you got to consider the risks that you're taking. Okay, that's enough of that. Let's get you involved in the discussion. Your questions and comments come first. So what money matters are on your mind? Don't save it. We're ready for any money questions at 888-99-CHART. Let's go to the phones and take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to ask about a couple questions. First one is I recently purchased, about a month ago, a few shares of QQQ and the SPY ETFs. Obviously, they're great stocks or things to own. I just, unfortunately, you know, they're really high valuations when I bought them, and I became to realize that now after listening to your show. Unfortunately, I would have probably not have done that had I known about your show earlier. Anyways, do you recommend that now that they just passed its cost basis of where I bought them to sell them? Because I'd rather get my few shares back or sell them and get, you know, whatever, $700 back and purchase better valued stocks instead. So I'd like to know your answer on that. Second question is kind of related but can you talk a little bit about short-term capital gains versus long-term capital gains on any kind of sale? I would like to know the difference, tax implications for each, and what the threshold is for long-term capital gains. Any help with that is appreciated. Thanks, guys.
Okay, first of all, yeah, I think value investing is a lot better than a lot better mode of investing right now than growth. So therefore, you know, if you're looking at the S&P or the NASDAQ, I would probably, myself, I would get out of them and look for better value. But that's me. But you also want to have, make sure you have diversification, and you can use indexes for that diversification. And I'm a little concerned, you know, make sure maybe you go to a value index ETF. So that's what I would do on that part of your question. Long-term versus short-term capital gains. Long-term capital gains is holding on positions 12 months or longer and then selling them and having the gain. It's got to be 12 months or longer. Anything under 12 months is short-term capital gains. Short-term capital gains are taxed at your ordinary income tax rate. Short-term, ordinary income tax rate. Long-term are taxed at 20% of your gain. Basically, that's the difference. It's pretty simple. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What's the SMART goal strategy today? That's going to be one of our talking points. Also, I want to talk about LEI, Leading Economic Indicators. A report came out today, this morning. I want to discuss that. I also want to talk about Mario Draghi, the ECB president. He had a speech today, and I want to talk about what he was saying. Remember, he is in charge of the ECB, European Central Bank, like our Fed. Want to discuss what they're planning to do or not do. And when to invest, where to invest when the dollar is weak? Where do you invest when the dollar is weak? And do you think the dollar is weak or strong right now, people? What has the dollar done this year? Do you know? Has it gotten stronger, weaker, stayed the same? What has it done? Something you better keep an eye on, that dollar. Because it really impacts your investment decisions. Anyways, those are going to be the talking points today. The Dow was down 22, the NASDAQ was up 5, and the S&P was flat. Not much happening in the market today. Why was it that way? Well, we've had a pretty good week, actually. So pretty good, couple of weeks in the market. After it's interesting because, let's see, how many trading days? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, about 10 trading days, 2 weeks. The market bottomed on a small pullback. You can see it better in the Qs because the NASDAQ was weaker, and now then it turned around, up 10 days in a row. And today it was up again, up 5 points, but it's still up today. So that's what the market's doing. Don't get too excited about it one way or another. You keep on track of your strategy. You keep it. You don't need to respond to what the market's doing right now. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. There's no investing glass ceiling for women. 3 ways to mess up index investing. Finding retirement without selling off your investments. Funding retirement, These are some of the topics we talked about on Invest Talk in the last few days. Don't forget, you can hear archive Invest Talks anytime on investtalk.com. And right now, for today's Invest Talk, 888-99-CHARTERS, how to get through. Let's talk about your money.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Andy from San Diego. Just wanted to let you guys know I love the show. My question's about Buffalo Wild Wings, ticker symbol BWLD. It's fallen quite a bit lately. Just wanted to hear your thoughts on where you might pick it up for a short-term position, no more than a year, maybe two at the most, looking to get a bounce here. Just if you could give me a good spot where maybe to pick it up, that'd be great. Appreciate everything you guys do. Have a good day.
Okay, Buffalo Wild Wings, Inc., of course, they're out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and operate 1,240 quick casual restaurants in U.S., Canada, with plans to open 67 more this year. 67 more restaurants. They made $5.30. They're going to make $5.30 this year. They made $5.18 last year, and they're going to make $6.59 next year. They're growing 5% or so, and that's down from 20% a year ago, and that's probably why you're seeing the weakness. It makes perfect sense. Now, restaurants is a pretty tough business long-term. They're pretty tough. I'm not keen on them as long-term investments, really. But Buffalo Wild Wings has some really good numbers. It's just trading at $122.60, and they're going to make $6.59. So that's about a 20 PE, 21 PE. And their five-year PE range is 23 to 44. So they're really at the low end of their range. If I was to be take a chance on a short-term bounce, this is the price I would buy it at, because it looks like it's trying to put in a bottom in the last 2 weeks. It hasn't risen, but it's moving sideways in the last 2 weeks. So this could be the bottom, and the weakness in sales, which from a year ago down from 20% to now about 5%, that's already built into the price. That's why the stock is acting the way it is. So it's probably near its low. Probably. The thing I don't like is it's at or near its low, and there's hasn't been any insiders buying, at least not reported yet. And I would think that if they were confident, they would, you know, buy. There's not it does not have a lot of debt. They have debt, but not a lot. And mutual funds are been cutting back slowly. There were 408 mutual funds holding it a year ago. Now there's 397. I don't know if that's significant or not at this point. But this is where you would buy it for a bounce. And if it breaks below the low it made about a week or so ago, then you would get out because, you know, you don't. There's no support below that number. Okay? BWLD, Buffalo Wild Wings. Let's go to Ron in Charlotte. How you doing, Ron?
Hi, Steve. Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
And what I'm interested in is investing a little bit more into the bond market.
Okay.
But as based on information you provided, I'm a little bit afraid of getting into a bond mutual fund.
Right.
I've thought about an individual bond, but being an individual investor, we don't get the best picks.
That's right.
But I was considering a target maturity bond fund. Now, I just wanted your opinion of these type of funds and how I would evaluate them.
Well, they're not bad because you have a maturity certain range. You know they're going to mature at a certain date. And because of that, you can get a better sense of how they'll react when interest rates rise or interest rates fall. So when interest rates rise, long-term maturities, longer the maturities are, the more negative impact it has on the bond value. So you can go with a shorter maturity range, and if interest rates rise, it'll have a much less impact on the bond NAV, net asset value, the value of the bond fund. And as you probably know, Ron, the reason why I like owning bonds themselves, and you hit the nail on the head, it's hard to buy them for individuals because you don't have the clout. But it's hard. When you buy bonds, you buy them at par, they mature at par, and you get the yield. You don't have to worry about NAV. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Ron. Appreciate that. 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk. Hey, Art, how's it going? It's Art, Menlo Park. How you doing?
Good, Steve. How are you today?
I am good. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you thought Verizon would be a good buy at this point. I actually wanted to get it yesterday, but missed out.
Yeah, it was up 1.77. Last week, was it last week? Was it earlier this week? Maybe earlier this week. I talked about AT&T. And I liked AT&T. I said, I like AT&T because, and we bought bought it for a managed account, and I compared it with Verizon, and I like Verizon too. VZ is a symbol, everybody. It pays a 5.2% dividend yield, and it very much, the chart very much fell like Verizon did, and it also had a good update today. But both of those are good, solid companies. You buy them for the dividend, and you try to buy them on sale, and this looks like a pretty good price range to me, even after today's 1% increase. I still think it's a good place to buy.
Okay? Okay. I guess you like AT&T a little bit better?
I would say yes, because I'm getting a little bit better. For instance, Verizon is a 5.2% dividend yield, and AT&T is 5.4%. So I'll take the two.
Okay.
And I think they're both equally as strong. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks,
Art. All right, Steve.
Appreciate the call. I'm probably going to get in trouble now for the SEC because I brought up AT&T. Oh, well. It's the way it goes. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So where's the smart money going for gold? You know, gold, I will tell you this. I am not a gold person. I am not a gold bug. I don't care for it long term. I never have. But there are opportunities and times when you should be in gold and other commodities. And I do think this is one of those times. But, you know, how to invest in gold is the question. Now, you can, there's gold ETF that tracks the price of gold. There's a gold ETF that tracks the gold miners. And gold miners move very different than the actual gold price. So, you know, miners usually are more leveraged to the gold price, meaning if the gold goes up 10%, the miners might go up 20%. But there's ETFs that you should consider if you just don't know what miners to pick. There's a number of them out there. And I do think that is a smart way to invest in gold. Now, if you are a person that likes to hold gold, physical gold, the best way to invest in that is probably buy gold coins because they're liquid. You can get, you know, if you buy, you know, Eagles or Cougarans or whatever, they're liquid, they're recognized. Do not buy gold bars. Now, why would I say that? Because if you just want to hold it forever because it's pretty, okay, buy gold bars. But if you buy gold bars and if you ever want to turn them in and get the cash, they're going to have to be re-assayed, I don't know. They're going to have to, because they got to make sure that they're still the quality gold that you bought. And that's going to cost money to do. So a gold coin, don't have to worry about that as much. You don't have to worry about it. Just sell it. Everybody knows what a gold coin is worth. So that's gold. I do think it is a time that you could consider gold. But as I said, I am not a gold, I'm not a gold buff. I am not. Okay, here's an investment term you should know. What is working capital? What's working capital? Working capital is a measure of both a company's efficiency and its short-term financial health. Working capital is calculated as working capital equals current assets minus current liabilities. That's working capital. Pretty simple stuff. The working capital ratio, which is current assets divided by current liabilities, indicates whether a company has enough short-term assets to cover its short-term debt. Anything below 1 indicates negative working capital. Anything over 2 means that the company is not investing excess assets. It's not putting all its assets to efficient use. Most believe that a ratio between 1.2 and 2 is sufficient. It's also known as the net working capital. Okay, now you can see more on this, and you know I've constantly told you to go take a look at investopedia.com. They have great definitions, great explanations. I really enjoy that website if you have any confusion. So go to there if you have questions. Okay? It's time for a mid-course correction. Now, is it really time for that? With the market creeping up day after day, your portfolio may need rebalancing. Certain high flyers may be overgrown. you know, maybe they're too much of your portfolio, take a look. If you want to meet with me and talk about it, I'll take a look at your portfolio and tell you. That's for sure. You can do that. Go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and just give me a call. You can send me an email. You can send me your portfolio. We're at the halfway mark, everybody. Plenty of time to get your question into the program. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley, and you can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART.
Our Invest Talk podcast continues next. But first, a reminder about our wealth webinar. It's scheduled for May 31st. That would be tomorrow evening, 6:30 to 7:30 Pacific time. So join financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein, along with Chevy Akison, a real estate investor, and they'll discuss the basics of residential real estate investing. So if you're an individual who is thinking about investing in real estate for profit, this could be a very profitable way to invest an hour. You'll learn about the tools and strategies the professionals use. You'll gain insights to help you reduce risk and maximize your invested dollar. Whether you're just getting started or currently own rental properties, this webinar will shed light on how professionals look at investing in real estate. The basics of residential real estate investing, a free live webinar, May 31st, 6:30 to 7:30 Pacific time. It's free. All you do is register. Just go to investtalk.com. That's InvestTalk with two T's. InvestTalk.com. Click on the InvestTalk tab. Now let's get back to the podcast. Back to the Money Talk. Financial advisor Steve Peasley is ready for your money question right now. Our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin, Steve. I just had a question on a stock. The employer I currently work for is offered stock in United Technologies, symbol UTX. I know with the election of Trump that it talked about doing more military spending. And want to know what your thoughts was on it and, you know, maybe what you would buy it at. Appreciate the call. This is Bill from Ohio. Thanks.
United Technologies Corporation, UTX, manufactures aircraft engines, elevators, flight systems, heating systems, aerospace products, and security systems. So, you know, it has run up from the election, the presidential election. I mean, it was low as 90, around 97, $98 a share. It's now at 122. So it's had a nice run already. So you got to be careful now. If, you know, I'm not saying that it can't go higher, but now the risks are a lot higher. It's going to make $6.59 this year and $7.05 next year. So that's a 7% increase. It has some debt, but not a ton of debt. It's growing 3 or 4%. It is a big $98 billion company, huge company. The P/E ratio is right now about 19, and that's pretty high for a big company like this. It's going to make $7 a share. Okay, that is what? About what? The 7, 130. So it's about what, 17 or so? So the range, through 5-year range, is 13 to 20. Good return on equity at 20%. It's a good, solid company. It's just a little pricey for me right at this point. I would love to buy it on a pullback if you get a pullback, and I would love to buy it about $111, $112. That would be a great support area if it got down there. UTX, everybody. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, LEI. Leading economic indicator. LEI, the LEI report came out today, comes out once a month. This is for June, so it's a little behind. It is up 0.6%. May was revised up to 0.4% when it was originally reported as 0.3%. So that's a pretty good jump in the LEI. What caused it? The leading economic indicators is composed of 10 components, 10 leading economic indicators that they combine. The stock market movement is part of one of those 10, by the way, the S&P 500. But the one who kind of drove it this time was strong housing permits. See, how the permits to build future houses, remember, leading economic indicators trying to look in the future. Permits tell you, well, if you get a permit, you plan on building, right? So the permits are a lot more important than actual construction, because that doesn't tell you anything about the future. That tells you about now. Now is okay, important, but for an investor, you know, everybody's looking forward. We're trying to get ahead of the game. So it doesn't help you and me. But this strong of a jump, and you know, the numbers are, you know, from 0.4 to 0.6, doesn't seem like a big strong jump, but it's pretty good. That's, and it, this kind of indicates to you that the GDP number is improving. Remember how bad it was the first quarter, better the second quarter. So we're hoping for improvement there going for in this current third quarter. You know, third quarter just started this month. So we're looking for improvement, and we'll see if we'll get it. It's hard to know, but we do, you know, we, for the United States, normal GDP for umpteen bazillion years before the recession was 3% or so. We haven't seen that since the recession. It's more 2% or so, a little bit above 2. And say, last year the same. So we need to see some growth. And I explained over and over and over why I think that it was 2. But it, with a more friendly tax code, if that ever happens, and more government spending on infrastructure, if that ever happens, will probably boost. Those two things will probably boost the economy. But they got to happen. Maybe they won't. Trump has been pretty on the big issue of the health care. That's not going anywhere, it seems like. So we'll see if he turns his attention to taxes and infrastructure. Now let's get back to answering questions. Our 24-hour anytime line is always open. As I've said forever, the number is always the same, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I just had a quick question about ETFs. Specifically, I have one that I'm looking at that is actually an active ETF by a fund company. And what's the difference between an active ETF and a mutual fund? Because it seems like they both have expense ratios. But is there anything else I need to keep in mind, which is better or cheaper? Thanks. Love your show. See ya.
Okay, I think you're stating what is an actively managed ETF versus a passive ETF. A passive ETF tracks indexes and sections of the market or, you know, commodities, something. But it's not actively managed by somebody. And almost all ETFs are that way. There's very, 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 very few that are actively managed. And they're essentially, an active managed ETF is no different than an actively managed mutual fund. All ETFs and all mutual funds have expense ratios. In general, mutual funds have higher expense ratios than ETFs. And ETFs are, you know, becoming very, very popular, whereas mutual funds are not as popular. So that's the difference. The expense ratios are usually less in ETFs, but an active managed ETF could be the same as an active managed mutual fund. Depends on what they do. What does their perspective say they do? Where do they target their investments in the market? Okay, it's always hard to know. Always hard to know. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. I don't have that email in front of me right now. It's in my briefcase, so I might have to get that because someone... So we're going to go ahead and go to a voicemail, 888-992-4278.
Hi, this is Ethan from Michigan. Hope all is well. I'm calling about the stock Rite Aid today. Exactly a month ago, I purchased a half position in this stock in anticipation that the merger with Walgreens was going to go through. The deal had failed. I was going to add to this position because I thought retail pharmacy is a good diversification for my portfolio, as well as I believe that this could be a longer-term turnaround story. And I was willing to accept higher risk for potentially higher returns. and we were looking about the 2 to 3 year time span. As we know now, the merger did not go through, but another deal took its place, with Rite Aid selling half its stores to Walgreens for $5.4 billion. Assuming Rite Aid uses this to improve its balance sheet, I think this could be a promising investment, and I'd appreciate to get your advice before I add to this position. Thank you very much for your time. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Yeah, you gave me a lot of reasons why you like it. Now, let me give you some reasons why I don't like it. Okay, this is Rite Aid. They are a $2.6 billion company. Sales are very erratic. They were down 5% in the most recent quarter, up 3% the quarter before that, down 1%, up 5%. A year ago, sales were increasing, but now they're not. Earnings 2007 are going to be 7 cents a share. 2018, they're going to lose 9 cents a share. 2019, they're going to lose 5 cents a share. So I'm worried that you're falling in love with the price of the stock at $2.54 because it looks cheap in a big name company like Rite Aid. It looks cheap because it deserves to be cheap. It should be cheap. They have a lot of debt. I don't like the debt. I don't like their earnings prospects. I don't like their sales that are slowly falling and erratic. There's very little reason to want it. Now, having said that, you can roll the dice on something like this, but make sure it's with money you don't care about, and I certainly wouldn't add to it. I would not add to it, okay, because of the negative things I just pointed out. And that's just a quick look at the company. I don't know all the internals. I don't, because I can't do that from here. Okay, Rite Aid. R-A-D is a symbol, everybody. Rite Aid Corporation, R-A-D. There was a reason why that deal was put together, and there's a reason why it failed. So you need to understand those reasons. Rite Aid needed it, needed the deal. Walgreens didn't. And there's a reason why it failed, other than, government involvement. You got to look a little deeper into this company. I'm a little nervous about it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Mario Draga gave a speech today, had some announcements, and everybody was anticipating he was going to talk about starting to cut back on QE, and he did not talk about that. He made no commitment on cutting back. He says that there's still very little to no inflation, so there's no really reason to tighten money supply. Unlike our Fed, who also has no inflation to worry about, but they are tightening money supply. So he wants to wait and consider his QE, whether he's going to cut it or not, in the fall. Now, what's interesting is investors don't believe him, because the euro is gaining strength and gained strength even after today. Traders are saying, I'm not buying that. You're going to tighten. You're not saying you're going to tighten, but you're going to tighten by cutting back your QE because your economy is turning around, and that's probably going to happen. And so that's why the dollar has been getting weaker, and that's another talking point I want to talk about. Because remember, the currencies trade against each other around the world. But Mario Draga is still being very loose with his money supply. He does not want to tighten yet. And Europe has turned around. Most of the European Union their economies are starting to do better. But the central bank is doing nothing at this point. And no one knows really whether he should or shouldn't. Central banks, to me, are way too involved. They should rarely do anything, my personal opinion. Because they usually go too much in one direction or the other. It's always the same. They loosen too much, they tighten too much, and many times you can point to them as the cause of recessions, not the regular economic cycle, because they mess it up. Now, I don't want to say they do it every time, but I'm not a believer in central banks being too active. I think we should have one. I just don't think they should be very active. 888-99-CHART. Our first priority is answering your questions, no matter how or when they come in. Let's pick up a call that came in before today's program at our 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Stephen, Justin. It's Owen from Massachusetts calling with a question about converting a traditional IRA into a Roth IRA. Currently, in my late 20s, I'm in a pretty low income bracket. So I'm thinking that when I retire, I'm going to be at least one, maybe two income brackets higher than I am now. So I feel like it would make sense to convert. I'm wondering how I would go about calculating how much that's going to cost me on my taxes. There's just under $6,000 in the IRA, so I'm wondering roughly what I should plan to be paying in taxes to convert that. And I guess my second question is, do you think it would make sense for me to convert it or just open up a new Roth IRA and go from there? I look forward to hearing your response on the show.
Now, if you have a 401k at work, you can convert it. I have no issues. If you do not, I may still suggest you convert it because of the lower tax bracket you're in. Whatever you convert to the regular IRA of that Roth IRA, whatever you roll it over to the regular from the Roth, whatever amount of money, if you do all $5,000, $6,000, that money, $5,000 to $6,000, is added to your adjusted gross income, and you're going to have to pay income tax on that amount. So you want to find out where is the break-off of the next tax level and try to stay underneath that. And you may have to talk to an accountant to find that out. You could just convert some of it this year and the rest of it next year if you're still going to be in a low tax bracket next year so that you don't pay all the tax in 1 year. It depends. It's hard to know. It's hard because I don't have all your personal information in front of me so I can talk to you intelligently about it. But that's the consideration. You're young enough that I like the conversion. I like Roth. But when you're retired, when those many years down the road, I like the option to have either pulling money out to live on from your Roth or your regular IRA. And why? Because you're going to get money from Social Security. You're going to take money out of your regular IRA, and that money is all taxed, income tax. Your Roth, never have to pay tax on any money you take out, ever. So all the growth over the years, you never have to pay tax on any of that growth. That's why. And the more years there are, the better it sounds to me. So your situation sounds like you would convert, and I would just check out the tax consequences. There's no penalty or anything. It's just whatever you convert is added to your adjusted gross income, and you pay income tax on it. You're listening to Invest Talk. We'd love to hear from you before the hour's up. 888-99-CHART. We'll try to get to your question. 888-99-CHART.
Hello there. My name is Jack from Chico, California. I got a question for Steve or Justin. I plan on getting married soon, and I'm starting to save for the wedding. My question is my money better off in cash or in the market? If I plan on getting married in a year, my question is I know I'll have to pay capital gains eventually on it. What I'm hoping is I can pay capital gains when we're married, and I might be able to be a little bit better on the tax side. Thanks.
I would not expose that money to the stock market, especially if it's money designated for marriage. Because what if you put it in the market and the market collapses and you can't afford your marriage now? So no, I would suggest you not invest in the market. The market is a place that's geared for long term. I know everybody thinks short term, but if you need the money within a year, 2 years, you need to not be in the stock market. Reduce your risk, because the market is very, the problem is people in the last 10 years or so have seen very little volatility since the Great Recession, which was 2008. So what is that now? 7 years, 8 years ago, 9 years ago? People don't realize how volatile the market can be because since then it's been very, very calm. In 2000, and I think it was the summer of 2011, it went down 19%. Any other corrections? Been barely 10%. And there have been few, not even that many, over that period of time, which is unusual. So I'm worried that people are getting used to the sense that, the market just goes up. No. This kind of reminds me of the late 1990s, where everybody thought the market just goes up, because there's a new way to do business in the dot-com era. Market doesn't just go up. It doesn't. It has a long-term bias to the upside, yes, but there can be times of high volatility. And we're not seeing it, but they're going to revert back to the norm. Everything reverts back to the norm. So you just don't know in a year or two what will happen. And I don't want you to lose your wedding money. I don't want you not to get married because you lost your money. Your bride-to-be would be very upset. Okay? So don't do it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. I have an email question. The question is regards, this is from Caleb, regards ETFs. Could you explain how the expense ratio works? Is it applied when you buy or sell the ETF? Is it based on a percentage of the current price? Love the podcast, and thanks for all that you do. Well, it's an expense ratio is a published number that the ETF company who issued the ETF or managed the ETFs or whatever, who administers the ETFs, they get a certain percent usually every month, every year. It could be a 0.4% would be pretty common on a yearly basis. And they would stay in the prospectus how they take the money. It could be once a quarter. And it's kind of hidden to you. They don't take it when you sell it or buy it. That's not when they take it. They don't. They just take it at certain intervals. And what happens is one day it might be selling at, your ETF might be selling at $12 a share. The next day it might be selling at $11.50. And it had nothing to do with the holdings going down in value. They just took their fee. Now, you have to read the fine print of the prospectus to know when and how they do that. Most people don't. But that's how they get paid. And that's how they take it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What about where to invest when the dollar is weak? And do you know the dollar is weak or is it strong? Well, the dollar before this year was consistently strong. Okay? But this year, the dollar has done nothing but gone down, down, down. You want to see it in a chart, go to stockcharts.com and type in the ETF UUP. You'll see it. Dollar's gone down. Commodities usually do very good. Foreign economies usually do very good as far as investments. Time's up for the hour, everybody. Reminder to you to sign up for our free Invest Talk Insider program. Lots of good information and recorded webinars for you. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Invest Talk tab on the Invest Talk tab. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and the whole KPP family, I want to thank you for being with us today, and let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.